Hey everyone, James LaBrie from Dream Theater, and you're listening to or watching the podcast Talking Into Infinity with JT and Brian.
You're dialed into Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater podcast. Be a part of the show live every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, Facebook, TalkingIntoInfinity.com, or the CMSNetwork.com.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater-centric podcast. I am your host, John. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, the CMS Rumble page, and CMS TV. We are live at those locations every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you are watching on YouTube, please don't forget to click that like button, click that subscribe button, and smash that notification bell so that you are notified every time we go live. If you are looking for video replays of the show, we have every single episode we have ever done on our YouTube page. And if you're looking for audio replays of the show, just Google Talking Into Infinity Podcast, and we are on pretty much any podcast platform that you can possibly think of. Without further ado, let me bring on my good friend and co-host, Brian Hendrickson. What's going on, man? Good to see you.
Yeah, man. Full disclosure, I don't know that I'm prepared. I got messed up on the assignment. I thought we were reviewing 1978 Ron Jeremy's masterpiece, Scenes from a Mammary. So that's what I watched over and over. And I have plenty of notes on that.
Do you have like a strained forearm from that or anything?
I do. No, that was a really dumb joke, but I had that saddled for like 5 hours, sitting here ready to fire off. No, I'm doing pretty good, man. We're into October already. Where the hell did 2023 go, man?
Man, I don't know. I was rewatching the episode last year where we did a I did a deep dive into Scenes from a Memory with our good friend Adam Rishog. And in the video, I mentioned like, oh, if I look all beet red, it's because it's hotter than hell up here. And I made mention of the fact that, yeah, I can't wait till I buy a house next year so that I have central air. And at the time I said it, I was like, I'm not getting a house next year. I am so far away from having a house. And when I heard that yesterday, I was like, wow. All right. That's a lot of change in 1 year.
So I was wondering when we did that. So it was summer of 22. We did the deep dive with Adam.
Okay. I think it was August, I want to say.
Okay.
And if you guys, for any of you guys listening or watching that haven't seen that, go check that out, because he does a phenomenal breakdown of the story of this record, and it's just fascinating all the detail he goes into. And there's so much stuff that I didn't know. And, man, I was listening back to it last night going, damn, I forgot how informative this was. So kind of helpful for tonight's episode, actually.
So, yeah, it's nice having someone on the show that knows something, since neither of us really do.
Right. So quick show note here. We obviously, tonight we are going to be ranking the songs on 1999's fantastic concept record, Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from a Memory. So we're doing that tonight. In 2 weeks, we are doing our Octavarium in the Octagon episode. We're going to have Sean Faust and Chastity Crawley and Kale McLeish on to debate that one. If I'm forgetting somebody, just let me know, because I keep forgetting the list, because I know that people are just itching to go to battle on that one. But there may be something at the beginning of that show that we may be doing. I have to get confirmation of it, so I don't really want to say anything concrete, but we'll just, a few hints, like, this person plays drums for a certain band we like to talk about. Just one of those things. But he may or may not have a solo single coming out tomorrow on October 6th.
So. Okay, I can't hold back. It's Ricky Rocket. Sorry. I swore I wasn't going to say anything, but...
It's the guy from Violent Femmes.
Yeah. whoever that is.
That is amazing. Yeah, so we're trying to lock down an interview with Mike Mangini. and it may be on October 19th. So we will do the Octavarium in the Octagon, but we're going to have an interview with Mangini potentially before that. So we got to get confirmation. So we're doing that. And I also got confirmation on November 2nd. We are going to be doing an interview with legendary rock guitar author Steve Rosen. He's interviewed everybody from Jeff Beck to Jimmy Page to Ted Nugent, all these different guys. He's been writing since, God, the late 60s or something, I want to say. But he's got an awesome new book out about Eddie Van Halen called Tone Chaser. And it is, and I'm not just saying this because the guy's coming on the show, it's the best Van Halen book that I've ever read. It's a very unique perspective. He actually was friends with Eddie for 26 years. And it's full transcriptions of all of his interviews with him, stories about his experiences hanging out with him and going over to his house and stuff like that. And Steve Rosen is coming on with us on November 2nd. So we're going to have him on. Obviously, we've got the big fan hangout is coming up here pretty soon. I want to say the date on that is December 22nd, whatever that Friday is. So we're doing that. So if you guys would like to jump in and co-host the show for a bit with us, just shoot us an email at talkingintoinfinity@gmail.com. And you guys are more than welcome to jump on camera and do some hosting with us. We talk about anything that night. It's just a musical free-for-all, complete with gorilla farts. So, Robert Husted, always good to see you, man. To answer your earlier question, yes, I do have a new Facebook account. He says, Ted Nugent for the win. No, I fucking hate Ted Nugent. Ted Nugent for the loss. I really don't like Ted Nugent at all. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So we got some really cool stuff coming up, man. But why don't we get into tonight's topic here, which... is a bitch. I'm really glad we're getting this one out of the way because this turned out to be a lot more difficult than I thought it would be. I realized yet again that I listen to this record as one solid piece of music and I don't know where one song ends and the other one kicks in. I'm bad with that. So it made ranking the songs a real pisser for me because I was like, oh my God, which one is this? Wait, I thought that was that song. Ah, damn it. So I'm damn near sick of listening to this album after having poured over it for the last week solid, just trying to re-rank everything. So
it is weird doing it with a concept album, that's for sure.
All right, so real quick, Robert Husted, John doesn't have cat scratch fever. No, I don't. Johan Alexanderson, great to see you, man. Thanks for tuning in. He said, why would somebody not like Ted Nugent? Well, I will tell you why. He's a fucking loudmouth. I hate when people just mouth off. It's, you've got this public forum, use it responsibly, be cool. And he's just a loudmouth dick. And, I don't like people like that, but one of the main reasons is he really disrespected Dimebag, immediately after he got murdered. And I have never I thought that was so unbelievably tasteless that, you know, the guy's just a loudmouth jerk is what it is. He's just a goddamn jerk and I can't stand him. So I just hate people with that personality. Like what he believes is right. Anybody else that doesn't agree with him is wrong. And he makes up all these huge words to try and sound all intelligent to make fun of him. So fuck that guy. Whatever. So there you go. There's my little rant on Ted Nugent. So
John, you do not have a stranglehold on hating Ted Nugent. I'll just tell you that.
I do not. I don't know how that guy ever got any Wang Dang Sweet Poontang. we've now reached the limit of the number of Ted Nugent songs I know the title of. Back to your point. Yeah, ranking the songs on a concept album is not easy. Not easy.
Or ranking them on a Dream Theater album in general.
Yeah, exactly. At least with a standard record, you could say, okay, well, like I say, it's not one giant piece of music. It's not meant to be listened to in kind of a different fashion. So the songs are written as little independent pieces where I feel like this one was kind of they basically had, that huge 26-minute demo that they had done previously. And they basically took motifs out of it and made individual, songs and segments out of that. And it's just... like I say, it flows together and it's got all these ups and downs, but man, it's hard to do. So how many times did you have to re-rank your list?
I only changed a couple towards the front, so the top ones. I flipped those around like twice.
Okay.
I thought the back, my last three I thought was kind of obvious, but
yeah,
for various reasons, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple obvious ones. I think this one was really difficult for me because there's a good, man, like four songs that I could have really put just about anywhere. And so I waffled on that a ton. So that was really difficult for me. But
I think the hardest thing on all these, like we said before, is like sort of like what goes in the middle, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It's always the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're going to have most of us will probably, it would be difficult to say, okay, the top four songs, anybody who listens to our podcast, I would assume two of those are going to be in there no matter what. You know what I mean? At least 50%, right?
Yeah.
Are going to get the same two. But when it comes to the middle and then going, okay, 5 to 9 or whatever, like, I don't know. You know how you do those?
Yeah. Yeah. It's every time I've done a ranking, either with this or, you know, on my nerd show, like, oh, man, it's that middle part just sucks. And the hardest one was when we had to rank the Marvel movies in the Infinity Saga, because you're talking about like 23, 24 movies. It really, like, the middle of that, you're just like, oh, God, like, how do you do that? You're talking about trying to rank like 18, 19 movies that you enjoy all of them. So, you know. So Alex Neal, good to see you, man. He says, a song like Beyond This Life is an essential part of the album because it provides a lot of story exposition. And I bring this up because that's the other part of this that was difficult for me, Brian. It's like, well, some of these things are here more for story than for music, I think, at times. So it was really weird, like, how to judge it that way. So I went with a very visceral reaction is basically how I did it. So I guess we'll see where we land. So why don't you start things off? What do you have in last place out of the 12 songs on Scenes from a Memory?
I was going to ask if we had 12. So I thought the obvious one was Overture 1928. Just because really there's no, you know, vocals or anything in that. So
you do know there's 12 tracks on this record, right?
Yeah.
You didn't write this down properly. I know you didn't. I know you didn't.
I have 12. I got 12 right here on my list, seriously.
Oh my Lord.
Why?
You really put Overture 1928 in last place?
Yeah.
Why?
Where would you put it?
Oh, you'll find out.
Okay.
All right.
Something has to be last.
Yeah. The Dance of Eternity is what I have.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're the one that's wrong then. All right, I was wondering.
No, I mean, Dance of Eternity.
How the hell could you have Dance of Eternity last? It's like their best freaking instrumental.
There.
Good Lord.
There. I just wanted you to be as pissed as I am. I don't have that last. I have Regression last, the opening track. It's just like a spoken word thing.
No, and but there's a little bit of singing in there. So I won't say where I put it.
You would rather listen to Regression than Overture 1928.
But there is a little bit of vocals in there. So that's why.
In a vacuum, if you have to pick one Dream Theater song to listen to, and it has to be one of those two.
That's not the exercise, Spaz. It's
yes, it
them.
Is.
No, it's not.
That's
it's
exactly the exercise.
No.
Look at this. Kale McLeish, both of these are L takes. I hope you're talking about my joke about Dance of Eternity, Kale. Because if you're thinking that Regression, like some spoken word intro, shouldn't be like, if the other songs like are below that, like, God bless. Kale, okay, this episode is canceled.
Hey, who knows what an L even is in the Austrian alphabet? So that could be like a W for American
there
words.
Goes again. Oh, my God. All right, so you have Overture 1928. I have Regression. Okay. I thought that would be obvious if, you know, it's an intro. It's a spoken word thing mostly. And it's not very long. Okay. All right. Well, what do you have at number 11 then? Let me guess. Home.
No, The Spirit Carries On. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
No, I have Regression spoken word intro.
That's not. That's not even a thing.
What?
Regression? You can't just make up tracks. Regression has the vocal in it. You can't just pick the spoken word intro.
Well, I put it down as that, Spaz.
Okay.
Good Lord, this is
you already threw me for a loop. I'm like, I'm all discombobulated now.
No, there's vocals at the end of regression. I don't know. I just
okay. I thought you were splitting out just the spoken word part. I was like, that's
No.
Okay.
I mean, if this is probably the only thing you're going to ding me on is switching those two. I don't know. I like the fact that we do get some vocal melody in the actual intro, and we didn't in Overture, and something has to be last, so those two have to be at the end, I think. But I don't know what the hell you have at 11. So,
man, I am really surprised that you had Overture 1928 as least favorite. Wow. And speaking of unpopular opinions, good Lord, Chastity. I think she's just trying to promo. She's doing like a wrestling promo, trying to be like the bad guy to get more viewers and listeners for Octavarium in the Octagon. She says, and my unpopular opinion is that my least favorite is Home. Wow. That's crazy.
I'm going to get annihilated when we get to 9. I already know that.
He's giving it away. Man, Chastity, that is crazy. Yeah, I got to go with Robert Houston. He says, how is Home your least favorite? For me, number 11 is Through My Words. I mean, it's like a minute long. It's a minute and 2 seconds.
Are you serious?
No, it's a minute and 2 seconds long.
Actually, it's 61 seconds. I timed it, and I looked at the track listing.
I looked at the track listing, and it said a minute and two. Look, it's a tiny little thing. There are others. Everything else is longer than it. There's more meat on the bone with everything else. You're really going to question me on, man, oh man, this episode is really flying off the rails real fast. Maybe it's a good thing we did this. Okay. All right. Interesting. So you have Through My Words. I don't even want to. This is crazy. This is already crazy.
All right, well, where are we at? Number 10?
We are at number 10.
All right, number 10, I have a song called Through My Words. It's only 61 seconds.
62.
Okay.
Robert Houston confirmed.
No, you know what, man? I had to put it there because it's one of the most beautiful melodies they've ever had in any song. I know it's 61 seconds or 61 and a half or 62. But, yeah, that's why I put it there.
Okay. Interesting.
Ahead of those other two.
I mean, when I started doing mine, I knew that Regression and Through My Words would be at the bottom. Just, you know, if for no other reason than strictly due to the length of the songs.
Yep.
Because there's, you know, there's other parts in other songs that are just longer and more drawn out and more well developed, obviously. So that's why I did my numbers 12 and 11. So now we're getting into stuff that's actually song length. My number 10 is Finally Free. So I've got the closing track.
Interesting.
See, now I'll preface all of this by saying, you know, I used in the show description for our ranking of When Dream and Day Unite saying Dream Theater is like pizza. Even when it's bad, it's good, you know, which means it's never bad. And this record is a perfect example of that because the songs are all really good. It's just which one is better than really good, you know, and you kind of go from there. It's such top tier stuff. Finally Free is awesome. There's some great melodies and stuff. They go back to, you know, some motifs they hit earlier in the record. You know, I like the lyrics of it a lot. I'm not usually a lyric guy, and I really enjoy it. But because a lot of it is just kind of like holding out that like it's, you know, it's kind of like just, it's obviously like a closing thing for them to kind of wave to the crowd as they're holding notes out and stuff like that. So, and I always wonder what the hell kind of flooring does that guy have? Does Nicholas have? Cause when he's like walking across the floor to get a drink, it's like, do you have gravel in your living room? It's like, so, yeah. So I've got Finally Free at number 10. Kale says One Last Time. It's very much a transition, between two of the biggest songs here. The chorus is beautiful. Finally Free does it really well, but I don't really find this to be a coherent song. Robert Husted has Fatal Tragedy in his slot at number 10. Maybe I've heard it too much. Still a good song. Man, all right. Okay. Johan Alexanderson does say that Finally Freeze, that's one of their best melodies ever, though. Yeah. Hard to argue all that. All right, so what do you have at number nine?
Here's where I probably get annihilated. I have Beyond This Life.
Huh. Okay, that's definitely lower than I would have thought.
So I never thought I would say this about any Dream Theater song, but I've always felt like, to use Lars Ulrich word, the riff is kind of stock. Now, that being said, where the song ends up, we go on this 11-minute and 22-second journey, or maybe it's 11:23. I've been wrong for here.
Nice.
But I don't know. There's something about that riff. It rears its ugly head a few times. It's always kind of bugged me. But I do like the way the verse builds off the melodic theme. And, you know, there's that cool, trippy middle part with the broken, clean guitar parts and the flanger on James' voice. And I love that the killer, all that we learned this time. You know, I love that little part, that really cool vocal thing. And I love the ending solo, you know, starts at, I have on here my notes, like 140-ish. You know, you get those stock, not to use the word stock again, but those Petrucci, those thematic phrases where he's playing way, way up on the guitar, you know, the super melodic things, but they're on the highest part of the guitar neck, those ringing singular kind of note phrase things,
yep.
Which is really cool. But I don't know, I just, something about that opening riff always is just like, man, this Dream Theater came up with this. Like, I could like come up with this in like 15 seconds. Like, I don't know. And it's kind of always stuck in my craw, but I do like the way they build off of it. But whenever that riff is just played with the huge power chords, I don't know, something about it, it's always just bugged me a little bit.
Okay. I can see that. I definitely have songs like that where it's like, I enjoy it, but something about it just rubs me the wrong way. I can totally see where you're coming from with that, so I can't really argue for it. That's a song that was difficult for me to rank. I had a real hard time with that, so I can't really fault you. I don't have it that low, but I cannot fault you for putting it there, because it is, there's a lot of, like, the longer songs on here, you know, you can really go back and forth on them if you'd like to. So that's, I can't really fault you,
like,
there, man.
That would be the one song, if they're playing, just to say, a standard set of just pulling stuff from all albums, and like, if this is the one they pulled from this album, because they probably want something longer, right? I think I'd be pretty annoyed to say that. It wouldn't quite be up there in Ministry of Lost Souls annoyed, but it would be second.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty extreme. I wouldn't expect that. I would think anything from this record would go over pretty well. So yeah, I would like it. I know I would dig it. But Kale at number nine says that he has Through Her Eyes. It pains me to do so, but this ballad with a drum machine is probably the last salad with the steak that is Scenes from a Memory. It's the best part of that salad, but it just lacks that punch.
Well, we are going to have to ban Kale from the show.
Right. Man. Yeah, I don't know, Kale. I really like Through Her Eyes. So I don't know if I can, I don't know if I can get on board with that. I mean, I understand if you don't like the drum machine part thing, that sounding thing, but I have that a little higher than you do. I will say that. So my number nine, I have One Last Time. So I really love the chorus on this one. It's a big sing-along type of a thing. The middle of this just started getting really difficult for me to rank. I think that this one is as low as it is simply because there's not as much here as there is with the ones that I have ranked ahead of it. And it is, you know, Kale mentioned it, you know, it's kind of like a transition song. It's kind of like gluing two bigger things together. So I think for that reason, that's why I had it as far down as I do. It's a little, well, a little, like, you know, it's about 33% of the song that the song length that Finally Free is. So duh, but you know, it's much more concise than Finally Free. So that's why I put it ahead of it. Like, it's more to the point. So yeah, I have One Last Time at my number nine. So far I've got regression from bottom to top. I've got regression through my words, finally free, and one last time. So what do you have at number eight?
Number eight, I do have Dance of Eternity.
What? You had it that low?
Yeah. I love the insane musicality on this, all the time changes, the super cool old-time 1920s barroom piano thing that goes on there, you know, the solo, always love that thing.
Wow.
You know, there's a thing, too, that I kind of didn't notice before. He sort of channels a little bit of the images and words, which all these songs, you know, obviously harken back to Metropolis, but he kind of channels his, a little bit of his Kevin Moore with that first Moog solo he does in there, you know, which makes sense because, you know, it starts out with Metropolis playing backwards, fading in and out, you know, the intro of the song and everything. And I don't know, man, it's obviously I couldn't put it up towards the front, but I thought it sat pretty well right here, kind of pretty close to the middle.
Interesting. I thought you would have had that higher because I know you're a fan of this one. I'm kind of surprised by that.
I will say, and not to give away points later, but I don't know if, especially verse-wise, I don't know that their melodies were ever, I don't know if the word clean is what I'm looking for, but just catchy, clean, just sold perfectly the way James sings them. I don't know, man. It's just something about all the melodies and all the verses in here, so I can't push those aside for the, you know what I mean? Like, those have to be up towards the front.
That makes sense. I'll give you that. I guess considering that you're a lot of your rankings and stuff like that in the past, and including tonight, are kind of based on whether or not there's a vocal in it. I guess I can see that. So, oh, you're drinking a beverage. What is that? What is your beverage tonight?
Some White Claw that our friends left over at our house. It's a tropical pomelo smash, whatever that is.
I never see you drinking anything unless it's like two things combined and the total cost is like $3.48.
Oh, dude, I got a story and I'll tell you later something I bought that was, even for me, I actually got out of there under like $3.85 and it was... Even for me, this was beyond pretty. This was Skid Row level, not Sebastian Bach either. I mean, like 1950s Skid Row bum level, disgusting, horrible mix.
It was an insult to a brown paper bag.
Oh, it was exactly
nice. All right, so when we're done ranking, you got to tell your horrible rock gut story.
Okay.
All right. So at number eight. Now, these next two, I spent a ton of time flip-flopping. And these were really difficult to me because they're pretty much equal. But number eight, I have Fatal Tragedy. And as I said, you know, I could easily flip-flop this with my number seven. And starting to get, you know, as I go further up the list, it got more and more difficult. And this is the start of where I really had to... I redid my list like six or seven times. And it was all because of the middle of the damn thing. So, Fatal Tragedy. I really like it. I think this is like the first time on the record you really get into some classic Dream Theater prog insanity. So I think that's really cool about this song. You know, once the instrumental break kicks in, the song just really gets moving and it just doesn't let go from there. So, you know, it speeds up and everything and just really starts getting into that quintessential Dream Theater that, especially when you're watching them live, you can just feel the energy just tick up, you know, a serious degree. So I really dig this song. You could say this about the rest of the record, at least my choices, I think. You nailed it on the head perfectly. Like, the vocal melodies throughout this record are so strong. And it's... I love that about this record because I think it gives it, like, it adds to the personal feel of it. To me, I've always listened to the production on this, Brian, and there's not nearly as much reverb on this as there is on some other recordings. And so it's a little more in your face, and I think that punctuates the story a lot better. So I really like that aspect of it. And the vocal melodies, I think, add to that. You know, you've got all this prog stuff going on underneath and this, you know, interweaving story, but then the vocals kind of ground you in. It's like you can hum all of it. It's all such a, just this awesome melting pot of just, you know, great, you know, stick to the roof of your mouth like peanut butter melodies that James puts down on this one. So, and this song is a great example of that, I think. So, I have Fatal Tragedy at number 8. Mike L. It says home. Home has sex sounds.
I just noticed that. We'll get to that later.
How did you just notice that?
I probably because I never really listened to it through headphones, which I think if you just got it blasting in your car, I don't know that you notice it that well. But yeah,
I mean, full disclosure, I didn't notice it except every single time I've listened to it.
I don't know.
All right, Kale says at his number 8, he's got Finally Free. I used to love this, but it's actually not as strong as I thought in comparison. It's hard to explain it, but it's just not as up there as it once was. Okay, yeah. Like I said, that's why I have that one down as far as I do. So, all right, so moving on to number 7. Well, what do you have at number 7?
That actually worked out well because I do have Fatal Tragedy at number 7.
Okay.
Or Fatal Tragedy, depending on how you want to talk
it. Tragedy.
You know, man, what I noticed about this, Serious Queen vibes, right? You know, it's a little bit of a metal opera type feeling going on when it starts, but it's not cheesy. Okay. It's still heavy.
Yeah.
I love the melody on the Victoria's Gone Forever vocal part. You know, and I think you had just said this. Halfway through, it kind of turns into a full-blown rocker.
Yeah.
Love the harmony on the, there can be no turning back. And then the there can be no peace of mind part of that. That is so cool, man, that little thing they do in there. The other cool thing is like that it's a super, super, super Mercury Brian May thing where those little accents where it's like the pipe organ hits those bum bum and then yeah. You get those kind of I don't know, I call Brainier. Them like minstrelly almost, you know, minstrelly metal guitar notes, like total Brian May, like 101. And they do that little pattern back and forth. It's pretty cool when they do that thing. That really has a Queen feel to it.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
But, yeah, this kind of a quirky, one of their more quirky kind of songs, I guess. They don't really have anything else that sounds similar to this that I can think of. But fits pretty good there, right at 7 or where you had at 8, I think.
Awesome. Johan Alexanderson, going back to his thing about home having sex sounds, he said, I wonder if those sounds are from a similar situation as in Rocket Queen by Guns N' Roses. Johan, I think I can safely say that Dream Theater were not banging chicks in the control room or in the live room, I should say, during the recording of their record. I mean, Portnoy was, you know, drinking at the time and imbibing in a little Coke as well. But yeah, I somehow highly doubt that Dream Theater was banging out groupies while they're recording the record with microphones live. So, Kale at number 7 says he has Fatal Tragedy. Is this the only one of mine that will meet up with Brian? There are some great melodies, especially that chorus. I love the Brian May harmony. So he's hearing what you're hearing on that one, Brian. So he could just be saying that because you were about to kick him off the show about 10 minutes ago. So
no, Kale knows his music, man.
Ooh, wow. Look at that, Kale. All right. Okay, so at my number 7, and again, you could interchange these for me, I have Beyond This Life.
Oh, my God. Seriously, no.
Dude, it was difficult for me. I start getting into areas where, like, the things I remember more, things that stand out to me more get ranked higher. Because it's just, those are the moments on an album that I come back to. And so when I do my rankings, that's how I do it. And I mean, I love Beyond This Life. Don't get me wrong. It's awesome. It, you know, it's that part in the middle that I've always loved is like that key. So it sounds like a horn almost. Like,
yep.
There's so many really cool, like, you know, just like accented things that Portnoy's doing in this one. And, you know, I think it's a perfect example of one of those Dream Theater songs that's, you know, it's over 11 minutes long, but you don't really realize it, you know. And even when I was listening to these, finally really trying to get the gist of where songs started and ended. You know, like I said, I'm not very good at that where this record's concerned. Even when I listened to this alone, you know, on its own, knowing it was going to be over 11 minutes long, it didn't feel like that. You know, it gets to the point. It transitions well from part to part. So it's really, it's awesome. So, I mean, this really is a tie for me with Fatal Tragedy, or as you were going to say, Tragedy. but yeah, I mean, they're interchangeable to me, but I like this one, man. And it's cool, but you know, anything above it, there was just something that stands out more to me. So, yeah. All right. So we've gotten through the first half, our bottom half of the record. Let's move into the top six. So what do you have at number six?
Number six, I have One Last Time. I know it's only 3:42, but man, another ballad one. I love the piano on this. You know, it's James on these ballads. It's just, I think it's really his peak vocally, you know, he lets his vocals really breathe and he just sells these songs and you could just really feel him and the emotion and the power in him. And I don't know, you just believe everything he's saying. I think this is kind of Jordan's coming out party, is all of the incredible piano work on this, the melodically, and none of it's like insanely complicated. I mean, there's some really ridiculous runs that go on the beginning of this too, but just the kind of pop piano 101 sort of way he approaches the voicing of the chords and stuff, and James just knows how to put the melody right on top there. I don't know who necessarily comes up with all those melodies. Do we know for sure who does that? I don't know. I'm not sure on the answer to that, but man, yeah, it sounds great.
No, I will never ever argue against saying that, you know, James is basically in his sweet spot when he's singing the ballads. You know, we talked about, you know, his solo record is just a beautiful place for his vocals, and the Dream Theater ballads. You know, I've got you know, a couple of them coming up, obviously, and I'm totally with you where that's concerned. He just, like you said, the vocals breathe, and there's so much emotion in them, and I think it really is where he shines. I think it's definitely a strong point for him. At number six, I have Overture 1928. I just love this piece of music. This always sounds to me like the sound of a band who is refreshed. You know, we all know the story about how, you know, after Pull Me Under, then the label's like, well, you got to give us another hit with Awake. And then with Falling Into Infinity, they were trying to write, you know, more commercially acceptable stuff and simplify their writing here and there. And finally they said, you know, F you, we're doing it our way or we're done. You know, we're just not going to do this right for the label thing. And so they did Scenes from a Memory, and they told the label to piss off. You'll get the record when we're done and you have no input. And I feel like you can hear that. It's the sound of a band saying, okay, we're off the leash, thank God, let's go have a good time. You know, I think it sets up the rest of the record really well in terms of the melodies. It's, you know, because there to me, I always picture this record as there's not a lot of minor sounding stuff, even in the darker parts. I think it's a lot more major sounding. I think you can tell their mood on this album through a lot of the melodic choices, and this song kind of encapsulates that for me. It's one of my favorite instrumentals that they've done. And I just, you know, I love it. You know, and, you know, it's just catchy. I like it. It's bouncy. It's catchy. It's upbeat. And so I dig it. I was really surprised you put that where you did. I can't even say it out loud. It's so disrespectful. So Kale at number six has he says, it's The Spirit Carries On. Yeah, you might catch some shit for that one. He says, this is simply a case of personal preference, and considering what's left to go, it's certainly no insult. It's iconic, but maybe a little overplayed in my opinion. Where do you stand on on the Spirit Carries On being overplayed, Brian. I could understand that, but I wouldn't mind hearing it like a lot. I love the way the crowd just seems to like come together as like one big happy family during the song when you see it live, and I'd love to sing along with it and everything. So I don't mind if they play it all the time.
Well, is it that overplayed lately? Because you know they do so many of these different. They've done so many of these different, you know, where they play the whole album and this and that. I don't know. Is it so? The last show we saw, the View, they didn't play this, did they?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. So I don't. It was probably was overplayed for a stretch there, maybe. Until they got to the newest album, but so yeah, I don't know. I mean, well, I'll hold my thoughts on this song until we get to it.
Okay. All right, so moving on to number five. What do you have at number five?
At five, I've got Home.
Okay.
You know, we talk ad nauseum. It's still sounds like Tool to me, but I still get chills when I hear that, you know, that Egyptian-sounding riff. It sounds like they're trying to break into the Pharaoh's tomb or something. You know?
Right.
You know, and anytime you get sitar sounds in metal, that's always... cool. I did put in here those freaky background moans, which I don't know how I never noticed before. I don't know what was going on there exactly. What was supposed to be going on there? Maybe I'm misinterpreting what the meaning of the song is, or I don't know. But,
there is an affair going on in the story, so yeah. Maybe it has something to do with that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. You know, the synth solo out of the moaning thing is just really, really cool. Probably my favorite part of the song.
Yeah.
I think there was a time when Home was overplayed. I will definitely say that.
Really? Okay.
But.
I see, the whole overplayed thing, like, I don't know so much if you could say a Dream Theater song is overplayed so much as you could say, like, it gets talked about the most. Because
that's,
especially
that's
back
fair.
Then. I mean, Portnoy switched set lists around so damn much that outside of stuff like Pull Me Under, you know, or maybe Metropolis, like, I feel like, because, I mean, I've seen them, like, what, 24 times now, and I can't say anything is necessarily overplayed, like, oh, God, they're doing this again. So I really think it's just, like, a fan thing. Like, we're so used to talking about certain songs so much, and this one is definitely one of the ones that people talk about the most from this record. So maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, Chastity Crowley says it. He says, the song is about the guy sleeping with his brother's wife. Yes. That is... I am so surprised you never noticed that before. That's crazy. Oh, well. All right, so at number five, you have Home. I have Through Her Eyes. I absolutely love this one. I think it's perfectly placed on the record as well. This is one of my favorite ballads that they've done. It's, you know, again, I think it's perfectly placed because you've got these two really proggy songs in a row, and this is kind of like cleansing the palate a little bit, I think. So I like that. The lyrics are fantastic in this one. They're so descriptive. I always just picture someone standing there in the cemetery, just kind of, you know, at someone's grave and stuff like that. And, you know, again, James's voice. I love it. And that falsetto part, like the power falsetto part, there,
yep.
I love that. That is just beautiful to me. And this is such a favorite of mine, and it almost like broke my heart to put it down this low because, you know, to your point about James's vocals, it's just this to me might be the most descriptive song on the record. I can picture it the most visually when you know when James is going through the lyrics and whatnot. So, at number five, I have Scene Five, Through Her Eyes. What do you have at number four?
Number four, I've got Strange Deja Vu.
Okay.
Which must be coming up soon for you because you haven't mentioned it. So.
No, I have not.
You know, one thing, we put this on our list of, what did we call it? Non-prog mainstream Dream Theater.
Oh yeah, like gateway songs.
Gateway songs, yeah. So yeah. I what I always loved about this, it is kind of a straight up rocker, and it's something that they really don't do a lot of. They kind of got back to it a little bit with the last two albums, especially Distance Over Time. You know, there's a couple on there, maybe a little bit more in the straight up rocker kind of vein. But you know, the hardcore prog people that are freaking out, they do switch it up, of course, midway through and go to the whole different tempo and a little bit different motif. But it still kind of feels like in that straight up rocker mode. And you know, I've said it a million times. It has that very kind of a Mind Crime sort of riff feel to it. You know, which mm-hmm. that's not a bad thing at all.
No.
And you know, I like the way the song kind of just sort of kind of builds to, and the way it ends at the very end, you know, kind of on that high crescendo thing is very cool.
Yep. Yeah, I'm a big fan of this song, dude. Like I said, I haven't gotten to it yet, so I will save my comments on it. But yeah, I think again, you know, like I said about Overture 1928 being like a good kind of gateway to the record and kind of showing you what's coming later, I think that Strange Deja Vu does the same thing. It's like the lyrical version of that. And like I say, I will save my thoughts for it when I get to it. But my number four, I have The Spirit Carries On. So
hot take alert.
Yeah, right. it's, you know, it's like the quintessential Dream Theater sing-along. And like I said, you know, a minute ago, I always love how when they play it live, the crowd just kind of seems to draw together. It's very much like a group, and you kind of, you know, Dream Theater fans, all of us know that, like, when you're out at a show or just talking about the band, like, it's a very close-knit community, because it's kind of, it's like our thing, you know. It's, they're one of those, you know, you either love them or hate them types of bands. And I think when they play this song live, you get that vibe. And you really, that's when you feel it the most. You know, everybody just, you know, safe in the light, if I die tomorrow. You know, so, you know, stuff like that. And I love just the vibe and the feel of it. And, you know, you look around and everybody's got like their cell phone on or a lighter or something. And it's just a beautiful melody. And, I think I've said before on the show that part of the reason I really like this one is because some of the lyrics, if I'm not mistaken, if they're not paraphrasing, they're drawing directly from a poem. And my mom actually read that poem when she spoke at my grandfather's funeral back in 1995. So, you know, move on, be brave, don't weep at my grave or whatever, that kind of thing. And so it's there's kind of like a personal vibe there for me. And also, it does take me back to Score, because I thought this was, the Score is like the best version of the song that they have on live records. And I remember being there and just that feeling of togetherness with everybody, not to be all kumbaya and shit, but you know, that feeling of togetherness with everybody was really strong, because we all knew that we were at, you know, what could be one of the legendary Dream Theater shows. It was a 20th anniversary thing, and everybody was just in this amazing mood, and then you get all of us doing that whole sing-along, and we're all swaying and stuff like that. It was, so this song just has a lot of good memories for me, and I love the melody to it. So yeah, there just happened to be three songs ahead of it that I think of a little bit more when I think of this record. So that having been said, Kale says, he's one behind apparently, at number five, he's got Beyond This Life. This is the strength of the album all rolled out in one place. Lyrically interesting, like reading a newspaper. It's definitely the third instrumental in that back half, though. And at number four, he says Strange Deja Vu. This is just an awesome track. Everything is rocking, and it's almost an opener, even in third position on the album. That bridge section is what elevates it into fourth for me. All right, so there's Kale's. What do you have at number three, man? Let's get to our top three here.
I have Finally Free.
Really?
Yeah, you know what? It's, and I'm wondering if I do have it too high now after listening to you guys kind of talk about this.
Nice.
I don't know, man. It's weird to put like the epic 12-minute closer third, you know, on what, you know, most of us fans consider one of the greatest concept albums of all time, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I get chills when Jordan's opening piano comes in after the acoustic guitar and the spoken word stuff, man. But I get chills on all of Jordan's piano on this album. So maybe that's why I've got it up there.
I love how this is not the first time you've questioned yourself when we start doing these rankings. We'll get into it. And oh man, I think I got that one a little too high or too low or something.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I love that piano part so much, and you know, this is what culminates the whole album. So I don't know. I felt like I had to probably put it at least in the top five.
Okay. All right. Well, my number three, I have The Dance of Eternity, and it's you know. It's one of the greatest Dream Theater instrumentals ever. I don't really rank mine in the same fashion that you do, saying, you know, like you prefer the stuff with a vocal on it. You put those higher. To me, Dream Theater isn't solely about the vocals, of course. It's, you know, I love all of it. So if it doesn't have vocals, it's all good. And The Dance of Eternity is damn near a perfect instrumental. It's just... it's so damn good, and I always fall back to that barroom piano thing. You know, I love that. That just took me completely by surprise the first time I heard the album, and ever since then, it's like it might be my favorite little piece of music on the whole record. I just, it's so weird, and that and the bass solo part in this are the two things that always stand out to me about this song and this record. I think about those sorts of things, but I love everything on this album, and I just couldn't justify putting other things ahead of Dance of Eternity except for two songs. So I was like, you know, admittedly, I did question it a little bit, like, oh, can I put an instrumental ahead of stuff with such incredible vocal melodies and choruses? Like, and when I made my list and listened to it in order, I was like, yeah, you know what? I can. So number three for me is The Dance of Eternity. For Kale, he says his number three is Overture 1928, which is anathema to Brian. He says, can't believe it. I've got two instrumentals back to back here. He just gave away his number two. Can't believe it. I've got two instrumentals back to back here. Overture is more simple, but it makes me feel really upbeat, and I love the Metropolis reprise and JP's solo. So there we go. Obviously, he's going to have Dance of Eternity at number two. He says, just plug into this and lose yourself in 212 time signature changes, some really intricate riffs, and even some ragtime piano instrumental. All right. He just gave us his number two. What do you have at number two?
I've got Spirit Carries On.
Okay.
You know, every huge band has one, you know, signature anthem. I think it's hard. As much as we love Breaking All Illusions and never cease to hide our love for that song, right. I don't think that's the anthem that Spirit Carries On is.
No, I would completely agree with that.
And I put in my notes, same thing you did. You know, if this was the 70s, it would be lighters instead of cell phones, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, when that comes in, the entire crowd starts singing. And, you know, and everyone always gets behind a song that has a message like this because... we all want to feel like, hey, you know, no matter what happens here, there's going to still be something down the road, and whoever comes 200 years after us might still, you know, we could still maybe influence that somehow, or this is not the end right here. You know, everyone wants that hope that there's more than this, and that's what this song is kind of all about. You know, no matter what happens here, it's always going to kind of be out there and remembered for eternity and make some kind of difference no matter what it is.
Yeah.
So the message of it and everyone sings along and it's a happy, great song. And musically it's the way it builds, man. I just love the way they build this song. I mean, it starts somewhere and ends up somewhere else, even though it stays in a kind of for them, a borderline simple framework. But man, it's just a great song.
Yeah, totally agree. And you say, you know, it builds and builds. It really is. It's like kind of like a continuous uphill journey, and it does get bigger and bigger, and then it's just all like crescendos in that gug 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 gug. Safe in the light, and yeah, and you know, you brought up a good point. The message, it is kind of like a simple, upbeat kind of, you know, uplifting message in the middle of a big, dense, heavy type of a story. You know, it's it'd be like if there's a song in the middle of, you know, Operation Mindcrime, like, oh, achieve your dreams. Like, you know, it'd be something like that. Just not as cheesy. But yeah, I mean, great points, man. Very, very great points. And I, you know, I had it at number four. So I really can't fault you for putting it at number two. For me, my number two is home. As much as, you know, it was discussed earlier that, you know, is this overplayed? Is it not? I don't think that it is. And I think that this is, you know, one of those songs that, you know, it starts the second half of the album and there's just, man, the atmosphere of this song is just so great. I do not agree with you where sitar is concerned. I hate that instrument, but I don't mind it here because it's Dream Theater and it's so damn good. You know, the intro is just like haunting to me. It always kind of feels like a, and I said this on the deep dive, it's like a calm before the storm. So it's like something bigger is coming. And as you know, long of a song as this is and as involved, it doesn't ever really get to that breakneck speed type of thing like a lot of their longer songs do. And yet it's still, it's again, you know, kind of like, you know, Beyond This Life, it's a long song and you don't really realize it because it's always going somewhere interesting. It's keeping your interest. And to me, it also, it'll always work live. It's just one of those tunes that as soon as, you know, the lights are black and you're ding, 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 the whole crowd's gonna go bananas. So it's just massive for me. So I love it. It's always a big hit for me when I listen to this record. So my number two is Home, which brings us.
I have to put out a public service message here because you basically just did hate speech against Middle Eastern musicians for your hatred of sitar. So
I did no
such
thing.
We are an all-inclusive podcast here, so the views of John Drake do not represent Talking Into Infinity.
Nice. Half of the views of Talking Into Infinity do not reflect the views of Talking Into Infinity.
Exactly. Over 50%, over 45%. So,
if we go by weight, it's over 50%.
Yeah.
So there we go.
All right. Number one, I'm sure you know what it is for me. I have Through Her Eyes.
Okay.
And I want to say something. When this album first came out, and I got to the song that was, what was it? Through My Words. I was beyond infuriated because this is the most killer piano melody with the vocal on top of it I've ever heard in my life. It was falling, or like it was the most perfect ear candy to me. And I only got 60, what did we decide now? 62 seconds of it.
62 seconds.
I was furious. I was so mad. I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? And then all of a sudden we wait like three songs or whatever it is. And we get Through Her Eyes. And I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Dude, I mean, just absolutely the coolest piano riff ever. So simple, so basic. I don't know. James' best vocal performance ever to me, and it's not even close. Just love this song. I'm on record about Count of Tuscany. This is pretty close. Like, I would love to hear this song every single time live. Like, I don't know, man. There's just something about this song. The way it starts, you know, with the girls singing, like, you kind of, you sort of get almost a little bit of a Titanic feel with that, you know?
Yeah.
It's not quite that crazy, but it's not cheesy, you know? I don't know, man. It just,
yeah.
The piano, the choice of the chord voicings on this, and then the acoustic guitar comes in. And, man, I mean, just the perfect song for James vocal to sit on top of, and one of my all-time favorite songs of any band, genre of anything. I don't know, if I had to make a list of songs that I've probably listened to over and over the most, this probably is in the top 20.
Wow, the high praise.
So yeah,
Maybe we should do that at some point. We'll give our, like, try and figure out what our top songs ever is.
That we've listened to. Oh, God, that would be embarrassing if you saw my Spotify.
Well, dude, I've never sat down and done that before. It would be intriguing to see, you know, like, what five Van Halen songs and what five Dream Theater songs are in my top 10 songs of all time.
So you have, what, you have Amazon Music or Apple?
I have Amazon Music. That's correct.
Okay, so does that tell you the top, like, songs you've listened to the last year, 2 years, or whatever? Does it show that, your stats somewhere?
I don't think so. It may, but I never look at that kind of stuff because I'm just too lazy.
Well, if it does, dude, this is an episode, and I don't care what songs are on there. We have to do it, like the top 10 of last year that show up on your, me, it'll be my Spotify, but.
I can tell you right now that there might be two Bowling for Soup songs on there.
Who cares? Well, that's probably just to learn them for the band.
No, actually, no. because we do 1985.
Yeah.
And I listened to their version of Stacy's Mom when I learned it, and I just got hooked on it because it's like a heavier version. But they've got these two dumb songs that just crack me up, and they're so catchy. One's called Hooray for Beer.
Yep.
And the other one's called Hey Mario. And it's like it's a newer one, and it's like set to like Nintendo music, and it's about like Mario chasing the princess.
Oh, nice.
And it's like, Mario, you're a next level bro. You got to know this princess ain't worth those extra lives. And it's got all the old school Nintendo like sound bites in it and everything. It's just dumb.
All right, this is an episode. We have to figure out how to do that on your Apple.
Yeah, I'll see if there's a way to like do that, because a lot of it probably is going to be like not surprising. And we're like, yeah, go figure. This is only that crap.
Wait, Hot for Teacher's on there? No way.
That I can guarantee you that song will not be on there.
No? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If there was going to be a Van Halen song on there, it would be for sure Hear About It Later. That's the Roth song I always go back to. Probably, if there was a Sammy song, it would probably be Judgment Day, Humans Being, or When It's Love.
Well, so, don't give away the whole episode.
Well, I don't know. And I have to learn stuff for the band, so for all I know, like half of it is going to be shit I learned for Brother Believe Me.
Right, this is going to be an episode. We're going to take the top 20, and I don't care what it is. I mean, I'm going to get I'm going to get crucified on my list. So, and I don't
care. Why? Because you're open-minded? I mean, it's not going to be like mine. Everyone could probably pick mine and be 80% right.
I have a lot of country stuff that people would be like, oh, my God, he listens to that.
So, okay, but that's why you say awesome things like chord voicings on this show, and I'm like, I like how it's loud.
Yeah, I'm super super technical with my knowledge of chords.
Look, man, it's way better than me. So,
well, I'm surprised that you're number one because I obviously know it now.
Yep,
that shocks me.
Yep. So my number one, obviously, is Strange Deja Vu. For me, every time I think of this record, I think of this song. And it's one of those things that just always sticks with me no matter what I do. I love the rest of the record, and I just can never get past, you know, Brian banging his mouse around his, you know, making all that racket, so I muted him. I can never get over the fact that of all of the progressive, amazing stuff... you're such an ass. That is on this record. The ballads with James's amazing voice, as we talked about. All the phenomenal aspects of this album. The very first thing that always pops into my head is Strange Deja Vu. And by far, I go back and listen to this one the most. It's an awesome opening track. I know Kale mentioned it earlier, saying, you know, it's hard to call it an opening track because it's number three. But Kale, I kind of look at it that way too. I kind of feel like Overture 1928 sets the table, and that this is kind of like the true start to the record in a way. I feel the same way about The Gift of Music on The Astonishing. So I think it, you know, it's an awesome opening track. Brian, you nailed it right on the head. There's not a ton of progressive craziness. It's much more kind of like a straightforward rocking tune. So, you know, it's just catchy and it's cool. And it starts setting the story up nicely, I think, lyrically. And I really like it, man. I come back to this a lot. So when I think of, you know, Metropolis 2000, when I think of Scenes from a Memory, this is the very first thing that pops into my head. So this was an easy number one for me. This was, you know, my number one and my number 12 were very easy for me to, you know, for me to choose. So, yep, I've got Strange Deja Vu at number one.
Yeah, I kind of forgot the fact that it's, even though it's three, it sort of starts the album because it's the first full song with, you know, with vocals and everything else. It seems like a full song as opposed to like a segment of something getting you to something else. Yeah. I mean, I already talked about it. I mean, it's, I am, so I'm trying to think what I would have thought you would have had at one. I don't know. Maybe Fatal Tragedy? Tragedy? No.
Tragedy?
No, actually, I would say something like Beyond This Life. I thought maybe you'd have that one.
You know what? I kind of thought that that's where I would go with it, too. I can't say that. I thought I would have that a lot higher. Like, I kind of surprised myself with my number two. I really thought the more progressive, longer stuff would be higher up on my list. As soon as this popped up, I was like, hey, Strange Deja Vu, man. Like, that's what it's going to be. So I knew that was going to be it. And I was not wrong. But yeah, I don't know, dude. Something about, you know, especially, you know, like my top four, top five, like there was just something there that really stood out to me just more so than the other songs. And I think maybe it's because, like, it's, you know, the other, like the songs that I have lower are more progressive and they're more about the musicality. And I think the ones higher up have the bigger melodies, I think. So I think that's, you know, what I think that's why. So.
Yeah. There's nothing on the rest of this album that sounds like this song. I mean, this is, like we said, about as straightforward rockerish, for lack of a better term, I think, as it gets.
Yeah.
And I always hesitate using the term straightforward because it sounds like, you know, like it's right. Super easy to come up with and play and think of and do. And that's not really, it's more accessible.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, man. Well, let's bring up our random number generator. This looks junky, but what the hell? I will let you decide when to stop it. I pulled it up. It's 1 through 15, and this will decide what our next song ranking is going to be. I'm going to say this right now. I think we should skip The Astonishing. There's no way we're going to rank that many songs.
Plus, that would be way too much work.
Yes, agreed. It's already going to be a shitload of work just to do a deep dive into that record. So,
yep.
All right.
Is it going?
It is going. Tell me when to stop.
Now.
Record number 8. Okay, so we are on what? Record number 5 right now? Because it'd be Dreaming to Unite and Awake. All right, so we're on the 5th record. So 6 would be 6 Degrees. 7. 7 would be Train of Thought. So 8 would be Octavarium. All right, so our next album deep dive is going to be Octavarium.
Why am I not looking forward to this one?
What's wrong with doing that? At least there's not a ton of songs, and it's easier to do than this one was.
Yeah.
This is easily going to be the most difficult one we do, especially because we're eliminating The Astonishing.
No, I agree. I agree.
I mean, look, just wait till we get to something like Black Clouds. It's like 6 or 7 songs. It's going to be like a 20-minute episode.
Yeah.
Like a Chastity. She goes, shit.
Yeah, I wonder where she has the title track ranked.
I know. That's going to be the only question mark on that episode. Does Chastity have a song lower than the title track when she's ranking her songs in an octave?
No.
Yeah.
She doesn't even have to do her homework on that one. The assignment's done.
She has Sacrifice Sons as a worse song than Octavarium. So, man, that's going to be an interesting one. All right, I don't know when we're doing that, but that is our next album ranking. All right, so before we give our quick show notes and then get out of here, all right, you have to tell your story about this rot gut shit that you drank that apparently was like the worst thing you've ever put in your mouth.
All right, so I have to find a picture. Let's see if I can hold it up to the thing here.
I don't think that's going to work. But
you don't think if I hold the picture up to the camera, it'll work?
All right, so put you basically, solo here, let's see.
So they don't have any. Oh, that was the good one. Hold on.
Part of this was good?
Yeah. Of course, I can't find it now. Right, I'll show you the bad one. I'll show you the good one first.
Okay.
I can't find the bad one. So what happened is Speedway doesn't sell Four Loko anymore.
Starting
so right
out
off
great.
The bat, we're... So this is what I... This is my mixture.
Oh, what is that? Cayman Jack
Margarita.
And what,
Margarita.
Cayman Jack and, Margarita. And what is the other thing? And,
Edge.
What is
it's,
Edge?
It's Ice House, but it's 8% alcohol.
Oh my God!
So
did you
get,
mix those?
Well, that's what. Yeah, that's what I always do because the reason I mix them is because I don't want it so sweet with the sugar. You've seen my routine. You know how I do this.
I just didn't know why.
Yeah, because it's too sweet. But the thing is, you can get out of Speedway with that Edge for I think $1.39 for 24 ounces. That's still kind of steep, but. But it's 8%. Now the problem is the Cayman Jacks is only 5.5%. But okay, I gotta find this other one real quick because this is the one that's really bad.
Hold on. Chastity Crawley with the your mom joke in the chat there.
Nice.
Oh right, my god.
Here.
I just that has to taste like wildly putrid.
Okay, now this is what's bad.
All right, let's see this. All right, put you back in solo. All right, so this is a Bud Ice and a Club Tales Sex on the Beach can. Oh my Lord!
I don't even know. I'd never heard of this before, but this is 10% alcohol. This Club Tail. This is the worst thing I've ever put together in my entire life. This was bad, man. Because I normally like if I do like the Four Loko and the Bud Ice, the fruit punch, I was thinking it was going to be something along those lines. No, dude, this was absolutely atrocious. So bad. And this Sex on the Beach thing was like, I think it was almost over $3 after tax. So
wow,
I was
you
getting,
splurged.
Well, I was getting up into the high fours after tax, which, you know, is not where it's not where I want to be.
I had to bust out a sawbuck.
It's like if I'm going over an Abe Lincoln, then I don't even want to be in the place. So yeah, anyway, I learned my lesson, but they literally they didn't have any Four Locos. They didn't have any of you've seen those. I think they're called MDX. There's like four different kinds. There's like a Long Island. There's like a Margarita. Those are kind of similar. You know, it's like a flavored whatever that I'll mix with the beer to turn the sweetener down. But like, yeah, that Club Tail 6 on the Beach. I know we're looking for sponsors, but that's not going to be it.
I don't know, man. If they sponsored us, you get it for free. Then you wouldn't have to spend that.
Well, that is true. But it's funny because everyone thinks that like this is like an act, but you can attest that this is for real. This is like, I actually am this cheap.
Dude,
I actually do like the drink if I get the right mix.
I just remember when we watched the Images and Words 25th anniversary pay-per-view at my old place, and you left some of that in my fridge, and the next day I was like, I got to see what this is like. And I was like, believe me, I drink Gorilla Farts on the show every December when we do the fan hangout, right. So I'm not exactly like a connoisseur, but... That I was like, Jesus, man, be a little selective. Like, it's not good. That is not good. What amazes me is that you thought that one of those two combinations might actually be somewhat tasty. That is,
yeah. I don't know how I first discovered this. I think we were in Hilton Head, and it was like I had one of these really sweet kind of drinks like that in a can. I was like, man, this is too sweet. Let's mix it with beer, and that's where I kind of got it from. And it just, I don't know, it never bothered me. But it's funny. I actually got Jill's dad to drink a couple when I first started this at Hilton Head. He's like, you know, that's not that bad. So he's literally the only person I know that's ever attempted something this horrible.
You roped the father-in-law in.
I did.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, that is so
bad.
Well,
I did it the same way I did. I said, here, taste this, how sweet. He's like, yeah, that's too sweet. So I said, well, this is what I do. And I And I made one for him. He's like, yeah, it's not bad.
Oh, that is just terrible.
Now, don't get me wrong. He's not going out and buying them or drinking them ever again after that one experience. But
that you know of.
Yeah, that I know of. But
you might have got him hooked on the I'm going to catch a buzz for less
sure
than $4.
Because his fridge downstairs is full of Guinness and stuff. He probably doesn't even remember mixing that. Because I think now, if I probably tried to do it now, he'd be like, are you absolutely insane?
That's why he said he liked it. He was probably six sheets to the wind.
Yeah.
He couldn't taste anything. His taste buds were fried.
Man.
It just enhanced the buzz, so he's like, yeah, this is good.
I tell you what, though, man. I spend $3.50 for sometimes almost $5. I got a nice buzz, and I'm fine. I don't need any fancy schmancy gorilla farts.
Those things really are bad, man. I do it just because it's become a show joke. But I'm telling you, man, if you go back and watch like the fan hangout videos when I do, you could see my face. Like, there's no hiding it.
Oh,
it's not like other stuff where you could be like, okay, well, it's not that bad. Like,
I told you, I would never again in my life ever even attempt. It's the worst thing I've ever, most disgusting thing I've ever heard of ever.
Oh yeah, it's not good at all. It's so bad. So, all right. Well, on that note, why don't we jump ship for this episode of Talking Into Infinity? That was a good time. I was very surprised again by your number 12, but you know. Kale, yes, you're right. He says, you just about die when you drink them. Yeah, if you guys haven't seen that, go look up one of the fan hangout episodes, and I do them right at the beginning of the show, and it's not, you could see right on my face. There's no hiding the fact that is just pure shit. So, but yeah, that was fun, dude. That was fun doing that. I was surprised by your number 12, but as I said, the next time we rank the songs, it's going to be Octavarium. So we'll get into that sometime soon. The next episode is going to be on Thursday, October 19th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we are going to be doing our Octavarium in the Octagon episode. It's going to be Sean Faust, Kale McLeish, Chastity Crawley. I really think I'm forgetting somebody on that, but someone will correct me. But yeah, we're going to be doing that. Chastity, not a big fan of Octavarium. Sean Faust is. Kale, if I remember right, you're kind of on Chastity's side. Are you not? Or Sean thinks, Kale, that you are on Chastity's side, and I don't remember it that way, but we shall see. That'll be a good one. And we may have an interview with the man himself, Mr. Mike Mangini, that night. We're waiting for confirmation. So we'll see if we can get him on that night. And then again, on November 2nd, we are going to have famous guitar writer Steven Rosen on to talk about his incredible Eddie Van Halen book, Tone Chaser. If you guys are into that sort of thing, if you're into Van Halen at all, or just good rock and roll books, I highly encourage you to tune in for that, because this book is a very unique perspective. It's not just, here's a bunch of facts about Eddie, here's a bunch of facts about Van Halen. It's a very personal read. It's his personal experiences with Eddie. A lot of his interviews were published, but they were redacted for length, and he publishes the full version. So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, Eddie didn't want printed at the time, and it's all here, warts and all. So it's really great stuff there. So that will be on November 2nd. And yeah, the big fan hangout, which I'm going to check my calendar so I can get this right, but I'm almost certain that it's the 22nd of December this year, I think is what it falls on. Yeah, it will be Friday, December 22nd, the big fan hangout, where we just hang out all night and have drinks. We have gorilla farts. Brian will make his horrific concoctions. And yeah, we talk about anything you guys possibly want to talk about. And if you want to jump on camera and co-host with us, just send us an email to talkingintoinfinity@gmail.com, and we can send you the StreamYard link that night. And make sure you look and sound good, and come on and just talk about whatever you want to talk about. So that is definitely like the highlight of our year, I think, because we actually get to hang out with you guys and just do a free-form show. And it's always a blast. So looking forward to that. Brian, another great episode. I will not see you in 2 weeks because you're taking the 19th off. So I guess I will see you in a month with the Steven Rosen episode. Before we go, yeah, yeah, Chastity, drinking into infinity. Yeah, that's the fan hangout for sure. That is definitely the fan hangout. That's my first That's the first day of my 2-week Christmas break, so I'm usually in a very jovial celebratory mood that night. So one last question for you. I know, have you read any of the Stephen Rosen book, and don't say aloud how you have it?
Yes, I have read, I think, first two or three chapters. Very, very interesting read.
Okay, very cool. All right. So you've got a month to get through a little bit more of that. So
I will.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for tuning in to another episode of Talking Into Infinity. All you guys in the chat who make the show go, Johan Alexanderson, Kale McLeish, Chastity Crawley, obviously Robert Husted, Mike L. Great to see all you guys. We'll see you right here again at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in 2 weeks. It will be Thursday, October 19th. It is Octavarium in the Octagon, and hopefully an interview with Mr. Mike Mangini himself. So until then, guys, he is Brian, I am John, and as always, carpe diem. Hey everyone, thanks for checking out Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater podcast. Just wanted to remind you that we want you to be a part of the show. If you give us a like on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at TIIDT Podcast, we post the schedule of when we are recording the show live. It is a streaming video platform on our Facebook and YouTube pages, and it has a live chat feature where you can comment on the show, ask questions, and we can bring your remarks up on the screen and have you drive the conversation. So again, give us a like on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at TIIDT Podcast, and come hang out with us and be a part of the show. Thanks again, and carpe diem.